You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody. Here District, the fantastic voyage. I'm the captain of this floundering vessel. It's been a blockade, Chris. We can't get out of the whatever that area.
The Straits of Hormuz or whatever.
We're stuck. We're trapped. No, man. But Chris Johnson, Marcus Johnson, first father and son, only father and son, to win a national championship at the same school. And thanks to Braylon Mullins, our streak still lives.
Braylon Mullins, that's my guy.
All right, listen, so let's jump right into it, man. We've got a guy here we've had on before, a friend of the show, as we talked about before we went on air, Zach Harper. Zach Harper is the writer and author of the Bounce newsletter at The Athletic, and host Sirius XM NBA Radio and Count the Dings podcast network. Count the Dings. Where's that coming from? Count the Dings. I love creative nicknames or names for podcasts. Count the Dings. Where's that come from, Zach? So, welcome, first of all. Welcome.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It's always an honor to join you. Count the Dings. So there was a time during our podcast where our producer would put in like a bell ding if we made a good point or we made an interesting point or just, okay. I don't know. He might have, you know, just been lazy and was like, I don't know, I'll put a ding in there. So it became this thing where one of our listeners actually counted up all the dings that every person on the pod has gotten. And surprisingly, we started using this as a little bit of currency. Our producer had the most. But in terms of non-producers who didn't have control of when that bell in, I had the most of the hosts that were on there. So it became this running joke. And then when we started our company and really got into it, we just were like, oh, count the things. That works for us. We can do that. So, yeah, CTD is 9 years in running now.
That sounds good, man. So let's tell us a little bit about the Bounce. I got to be honest, haven't gotten into it like I will.
That's fine. I've seen snippets.
I've seen excerpts. Mm-hmm. I love the material. I love the bouncies and the awards and all that. But talk about that and kind of what's happening with that.
Yeah, we've been doing the basketball newsletter at the Athletic for about three years now. And it's every Monday through Friday. And I know what people are saying, like, oh, the Athletic, I don't want to pay for another thing. The Bounce is free. Theathletic.com/thebounce. You don't even have to pay for it. It comes to your email every morning. I don't know, about 9 a.m. Central Time when it should be in that area. So, yeah, I write it every day, have my editors make it look good and make it sound, you know, somewhat coherent. And it's honestly such a joy to write because I get to kind of just do whatever I want with it. They just like, yeah, just make sure it's filed the night before and we'll put it together. And so I get to kind of just really explore what I'm interested in basketball. I think what other people would be interested in. We have a great time with it.
Well, and so riddle me this. Is that when you had that outstanding column you wrote about the obvious omission from the Hall of Fame this year?
I got
to get the Bounce. Now, I read that. Yeah. Of course, I read that.
Yeah, yeah. So we put the Bounce in a digital version on the website. So you can get it in the app, you can get it on the website. Okay. But it does go out to everyone's email every morning. But yeah, that's where I wrote that. And I believe I led the Bounce with that day because my editor had come to me and said, like, hey, you know, we got the Hall of Fame stuff coming up. Do you have any thoughts? I was like, oh, I got a thought. For sure, I got a thought on this. And, you know, once again, I don't want to dwell on it, but, like, you should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame, and it is a joke that you are not.
It's become a running joke. I think a five-time finalist. I've lost count. I mean, people have said six. They said five. I thought it was four. But John DeLiva from the Naismith, the Angel of Death, I called him. We had a great conversation, and he told me not to get discouraged, which, you know, it's easy to say, hard to do at times. But he talked me off it's funny. When I didn't make it about the third time, I may have shared this story with you, Zach, but I was taking my daughter to a AAU tournament in Orange County, and we got there a little bit late. She had to rush in. As I was about to get out the door, my phone beeped, and it was Walt Frazier. And I got him in my phone as Clyde. So Clyde came on the screen. So I told her, I got to take this. You go in. I'll meet you inside. You find your court, find your team. And so I said, what's up, man? man, this is like I didn't make it like the third time. He's been F these MFers, man. They did the same crap to me, man. F these MFers, man. They're F them, man. I was like, can I quote you on that, Clyde? You can quote me on that, man. F these MFers. So, you know, you can imagine, Zach, after the Chris, after about the fifth time, it's like, you know, that was the basic sentiment. But then after talking to John DeLiva, he's like, look, you belong in. You know, you can trust me. Your time is coming. Please be patient with us. He was almost begging me. So, you know, I left there, that conversation, feeling a lot better than I felt when he first gave me the news that unfortunately you didn't make it, you know, this time around. So anyway, it, you know, it'll happen if it happens, when it happens, but it doesn't define me as a player, as a person. And I'm not going to be here, sit here and bull crap you guys about, oh yeah, I don't care if I get in or not. Of course I want to get in. But if I don't, for whatever reason, 24 voters, you need 18 of the 24 votes. You know, so we'll see. I mean, but I'm patient. I've been through the process five times before.
Yeah, so. You got to be patient at this point, right?
Like, yeah. But what can you do? What can you do? Yeah. What can you say?
So I just, I just think the point of the Basketball Hall of Fame is to tell the story of basketball. And I don't think they could do that without you. So that's, that. I mean, I genuinely believe that.
Yeah, I appreciate, and here's my thing too. And I said I wasn't gonna belabor, but now here I am belaboring. But no, you know, to me, so it's the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. So it's more than just what you do as an NBA player.
Of course.
And my NBA career, you know, it was cut short by injury. I played basically 9+ years. They give me credit for 11, the 2 years I didn't play. But you know, 5 All-Star teams in those 9 years that I played, and you know, 3 times All-Pro, blah blah blah. I can just go on down the list, but also. You know, first John Wooden Award winner. I had the good fortune of handing the award out to Cameron Boozer the other night. You know, L.A., I was, you know, one of the top 5 in L.A. for a long time until Westbrook and Kawhi and Westbrook and Paul Pierce and Harden, you know. So I'm like top 10, I think, still right around there somewhere. But anyway, so that's the only case that I would make for myself. Go ahead, Chris.
MJ, I think the good part, Zach, that you brought up in the article was the statistical production in the first 11 seasons. And then comparing that with the 25 guys that are Hall of Famers, the 6 current guys that are non-Hall of Famers, but obviously are going to be in. I mean, when I saw that, I had never contextualized it that way ever, right? And I saw that because I'm a daily reader of your stuff. I subscribe to The Athletic. I subscribe. It's well worth the subscription. So when I saw that, it just made me a little more pissed. Because I'm like, wait a second. This, like, he's the only dude, literally.
The only one.
The only one.
Yeah. Well, and see, and it reminds me, Zach, of Chris's sophomore year. So when the voting was, when the coaches voted for all conference, Chris led the conference in scoring for the number one team in the conference. He was UCLA. Mm-hmm. He was the number one scorer on that team in conference play. And my thing was that this got to be the first time in history that when the voting was taken, that the guy who's leading the conference in scoring for the number one team in the conference is not on the all conference team. And that's so, your article kind of helped kind of point things out and just point out the absurdity, if I may, of, you know, just kind of what these guys are thinking. So anyway, it is what it is, but appreciate you, man. Appreciate you.
Absolutely.
Good looking out. Good looking out. All right. So that's enough of that. Let's move on. Hall of Fame was first. Okay. Coaches. Bucks are looking for a head coach. And Eric Name, man, he wrote a comprehensive article. I was looking for my name on that. I was looking for Chris's name, my name, Josiah, you know, Gilbert Arenas. Like, you know, Dusty May and Sean Everybody. Sweeney. John Sweeney was a great call. Jared Jack, Steve Hetzel, Todd Golden was interesting from University of Florida. He coached Chris Jamari Abuye, USF, and Jamari speaks highly of him. Tony Dobbins, guys I've never really, I'm not that familiar with on this list, but in terms of your viewpoint on the Bucks, I'm not asking you to make a prediction, but just if you could give me kind of a prototype of what you think this team needs right now.
Yeah, you know, I actually look a lot at it like, you know, there's one guy who's, you know, Taylor Jenkins is out there. He's been out there since the end of last season. And then I look at someone like a Charles Lee who took over the Hornets and took a little bit, you know, it looked like, oh, no, still the same Hornets. But then at some point this year, it clicked, right? And I think a guy who, not to, if someone like a Jamal Mosley ended up being available at the end of the season, right? You know, you hear whatever you hear. I think it's guys like that. It's guys who can take younger players, and we know the Bucks, you know, they're not in a position to like just do a full tear down and all this stuff. Like they don't have the draft picks for it. So they have to remain competitive. But I think with this team, you're looking for guys who can improve those players on the margins, right? And get the, you know, guys who are a little rough, and then they can get their game more polished. They can kind of learn how to do this. And I think like Jenkins is that guy. Jamal Mosley did a great job with that, you know, establishing a culture in Orlando, you know, early on. And then you look at what Charles Lee has done, a coach like that who can say, all right, you give me these players to mold, I will mold them. I will make sure we have an identity. And that identity is something we're going to ride with game in and game out.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
How important, Zach, do you think it is that the head coach of the Bucks be younger or in that younger range versus, say, an old season veteran that's coming in as not a retread, but one of those type of guys? How important do you think that dynamic is?
I mean, it's an interesting conversation, right? Because you want someone who knows how to coach NBA players and knows how to find that success at that level. So I do think that matters, whether that's a retread, whether that's just someone who's been around a long time. I do think that matters. But, and now granted, I'm in my mid-40s now, so it's not like I'm that in tune with younger people. I hear what I hear from my nieces and my nephew. I don't understand most of it. But you do need, you know, I think you look at like a young up-and-comer who's got all these, you know, all these ideas of how to further basketball, how to adapt to what's going on now, maybe isn't as rigid and can connect with younger people. You don't necessarily need a coach who's going to be like friends with the players. Like, I don't think that's necessary, but you do need someone who can find that connection. And so like, yeah, you could get an older coach who's been around a lot and comes in and says, this is how we do things and whatever. That may take, you know, that may work with the players, but as long as you get someone who can connect that message and get them to buy in, that's probably one of those younger up and coming guys. But also they have to learn then how to coach at the NBA level.
Okay, so a couple of things to that point. So when Coach Bud took over, Mike Budenholzer, I remember we were struggling at one point, guys. We were in Indianapolis, IUPUI. We were practicing at George Hill's alma mater, right? And so Coach Bud was walking through stuff, Zach, Chris, with Giannis about holding on to the ball a little too long. Get off the ball a little earlier. The offense is kind of stalled at times. And so we start scrimmaging. And Giannis has a chance to make a couple of layups, and he doesn't. He just stands there and passes. And so Coach Bud stops practice. God dang it, Giannis, quit being an effing baby. Just because I tell you to get off the ball, now you won't shoot a layup. Quit being an effing baby. That's baby stuff. I mean, it was like, and so Katie George was our sideline reporter. She's looking up from her laptop. I'm like, act like you don't hear it. Act like you don't hear it. Just keep typing. But that's the, and Bobby Portis touched on it. Just somebody that's going to bring some structure. Somebody that's not afraid to get into Giannis, get into some of these other guys when it's necessary. And Giannis is the guy, you know, obviously he's the face of the franchise, if he's around. I mean, he'd be the guy that you really have to kind of pull that card on. Other than Taylor Jenkins, when he was with Milwaukee as Bud's assistant, he ran some of the most competitive drills. It was just fun, just shooting drills. But it was like a round robin Final Four. And these two teams, and he was just in there, and you know, he got the guys all pumped up, and the energy was in the building, and everybody's clapping, everybody's going at each other. You know, it was just remarkable, Chris, just watching the impact that a coach can have on just a monotonous shooting drill in practice. And then Charles Lee, when he was with the Bucks, what I saw in him, Zach, was he was working out Chris Middleton, and he's working out like a jab series. I'm like, man, where'd you get that from? Well, I watched old tapes of Carmelo Anthony, and I thought that Chris could implement that into his game. I was like, well, how does Chris feel about you telling him to play like Carmelo Anthony? You know, no, he's open to it. He loves it. He keeps telling me to find other video. So, I mean, so just to let people know, there's a technique in coaching in terms of reaching these players, connecting with these players that you must have. You must have in today's game.
Yeah. I think to that point too is, you know, you just mentioned under Mike Budenholzer, all these different coaches, these assistants, like your assistant staff is going to matter almost just as much as your head coach decision, because you need that everyday development. I mean, it's why there's what, 15 coaches on a bench now in the first and second rows is because they have all these different specialized things. And I think that, you know, that's, it's just such a great point. It's so important to be able to get that message through, but also, you know, you got to kind of make everything its own culture with like the shooting drills, or we're going to do this, and you make it fun. That way it doesn't feel like practice. It feels like you're just hooping.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, as much as I respect the Tom Thibodeaux of the world, I just don't know if that style. I mean, Sam Cassell is an interesting pick just because of the respect he has around the league. So, it's, you know, this is going to be a fun to watch how this thing kind of plays out, man. And then to see if Jamal Mosley, if he's available. I've heard New Orleans. I've heard some other destinations possibly for him. And I mean, and on Darvin Ham. Darvin Ham has got head coaching experience. I've seen him in person connect with the players. His son, Donovan Ham, is the one that is primarily responsible for the development of Ryan Rollins. So, you know, we'll see. It's going to be fun to watch how this plays out. All right, let's go to the lottery. Bucks for the first time since 2016. We'll be in the lottery. We don't know where yet. I mean, the percentages, you guys were talking about it early on. After what happened with Dallas, man, I'm throwing that stuff on the back burner and just fingers crossed that we get a breakthrough. But in terms of players out there, let's say we don't get a top 6 or 7 or 8 or 9. We're somewhere around 9, 10, 11, somewhere around there. Is there anybody out there that you just really like that you think is going to be a pro that maybe we're not talking about as much as some of these other guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a kid who from Arizona, Braden Burries, who like I think needs work, but like he's a guy like he has an ability to score the ball. Like, and while his NBA career is not worked out yet, he reminds me a lot of like Jordan Hawkins when he was at UConn, and just that type of score, that type of player. I think you could develop a shot there. Nate Ament from Tennessee is a kid that, like, you know, he's what, 6'10", 6'11", reminds me a little bit of like early Pascal Siakam in that way. And I think you can kind of, you know, he had much higher draft stock at the beginning of the season. So maybe you feel a little bit, you know, nervous about, okay, he fell to maybe that 10, 11, 12 range. But I also think like you put him in some NBA coaching, you put him in an NBA system, you get him working with a nutritionist and all this stuff. I think you could really see him take off. And then I don't think he's going to fall there, but if somehow they ended up in that, you know, I don't know, that, 6, 7, 8 range, or if they could get into that top four, this kid Darius Acuff, like I was so impressed with him at Arkansas. Like I think he's probably going to go higher. I think he's more in that Kingston Fleming's range of a top five, top six pick. But Acuff's a guy where I just look at him and I like that kid knows how to hoop. He knows how to get to his spots. He knows how to be comfortable around the rim. Like, yeah, you got to teach him some defense and everything, but you still got to teach me defense at this point. Like some people you just, you know, you take the strengths over the weaknesses. I think at worst, he's a guy that will break down a defense consistently and set teammates up.
So you mentioned some Darius Acuff. I got a chance to interact with him at the Wooden Awards and, you know, and again, I hadn't followed college basketball. I'd heard of him, but I was like, man, what did you average this year? He's like 23. I'm like, well, how old are you? He's like 18. I'm a freshman. I'm like, well, yeah. John Calipari, 23, 18. Just that alone, you know, in that conference tells me all I need to know about this dude. Yeah. And, but now in terms of the Bucks, Chris, and I want your opinion on this too. And it's a rhetorical kind of, but you get the gist of where I'm coming from. Thon Maker, Marjon Beauchamp, DJ Wilson. I mean, how important is it for the Bucks to get this thing right, man? How much pressure is on John Horst and Milton Newton and crew to get this thing right this time around?
I mean, it's the big one, right? Like Chris, I'm also curious what you think, but you know, you don't have control of your draft for years after this one. Like this is, you don't really have control of your draft here either, but you at least know you're getting a good pick. You gotta hit, especially like if this franchise is in flux this summer and the roster starts going different ways, you got to nail this one. It doesn't have to be a franchise player. It doesn't have to be a guy who's 5-time All-NBA and 5 All-Stars or anything like that, but it's got to be a guy that you see part of the foundation with. And I think that's the key, is like, it's, you know, you, the Marshawn Beauchamps of the past and Joe Alexander's of the past, all this stuff, you just can't miss. It doesn't have to be a superstar, but it's got to be a guy, you know, the next 10 years he's here and he's going to contribute to everything we're trying to do.
Yeah, I've been in the same, from the same school. I hold the same thought process when it comes to the Bucks this summer. I said that this is their most important offseason in this franchise's history, in my opinion, because of what's at stake and what the Bucks are facing.
Yeah, the pressure, the heat, whatever, it's on. Any chance Yaxo Lindenberg will be available for us at 10? I love this young man, man, out of Michigan. He's older.
Yeah,
he's 23. He's older, but
that's okay. They're not doing a full teardown and like, all right, we're going to be 18 win team for the next 10 years or whatever. Like, they need guys who can play now. Yaxel can absolutely play now. I think he'll be in the mix towards the end of the lottery. So, you know, 10 through 14, he'll definitely be in the mix there, unless he just has a workout that blows people away. Maybe then he gets into that like 7-8 range, but he's someone where I was so impressed with him. Like, obviously we've seen him for a few years now, but this season at Michigan, his ability to just do whatever was needed. And then I don't even know that he should have been playing in the last couple of games. And he just gutted through it and was like, no, this is it. We've come this far. We're going to play. It was a very old school mentality that I really enjoyed. And I just, man, you can't bring in, whether it's a 19-year-old, a 23-year-old, whatever it is in the draft, you get guys who seemingly know how to win and are just there to provide a toughness that means so much in establishing whatever that next culture is.
Okay, listen, guys, explain this to me. Explain this to me. Why is Cameron Boozer rated so much higher than Yaxel Lindenberg? Is he that much better, Chris, Zach? Is he that much better? He's at 1 or 2 or 3 at the worst. They're saying, you know, Yaxel may go down to 8, 9, 10, 11 back in the lottery. Is he that much better?
I think you look at where he is at 18, 19 versus where Yaxel is at 23. Okay. That age gap, you start going, all right, what can he do? He's a pretty good shooter. He's a pretty good shooter. Especially if you're looking at a guy you want to build around, you're definitely going to skew younger with the players in the draft. But in terms of skill set, knowing how to play everything, like Yaxel's got him. And this is one of my favorite quotes. I don't think he came up with it, but it's definitely a coach's quote. You know, when I covered the Timberwolves years and years and years ago, Rick Adelman would just always say, potential is what get coaches fired, right? So that potential is great for Boozer, and he's going to be a really good player at the NBA level. I don't know if he's like a number one guy. But also, like, you never know. Like, the guy who's coaching in the first few years may not be coaching in the next few years, right? Yeah. Like, so that potential, like, I would, you know, I would say, like, yes, he's way more intriguing. He's definitely better at that age than Yaxel was.
But in terms of
contributing now, like, Yaxel's right there.
Yeah, and I also think that Boozer has a skill set. He surprised me this year with his ability to work out at the top of the key and pick and roll, making decisions, facilitating, and at 18 years old, doing it in one of the toughest conferences in the country, right? And he's out there running pick and roll, the ball handler, PNR, ball handler, synergy data on that guy is looking pretty good.
You know what I'm saying?
It's pretty impressive. That's a shock to me. That's a shock to me. So I think the upside on Boozer is great. And then it's he's a winner too. Like, Jackson won a national title, but don't make no mistake about Cam Boozer. You know, he had one of the greatest high school sort of careers in terms of being
Peach Jam, three-time champion, four-time champion in high school. Yeah, I saw that stuff. I was like blown away. I was like, damn,
okay. So that's why I'm really high on Boozer. I wasn't at the beginning of the season, but he showed it. He did it consistently and showed up in big moments. And so that's why I feel like he'll be a seamless fit in the NBA. I think he's going to produce right away.
Well, it reminds me of Sam Presti. I got to know him. I did the final few games with Kevin Calabro of the Sonics when they were in Seattle. Sam was just starting out with the Sonics, KD's rookie year, Jeff Green, that whole crew. And so Sam would call me up about Pac-8, Pac-10, or Pac-10 or Pac-12 ball players. So he called me up this one off season. So he's like, you know, I got to ask you a question. Who do you think is better between O.J. Mayo, Jared Bayless, and Russell Westbrook? So I was like, well, you know, O.J. Mayo is like a bucket. He's going to give you he's a 20-point scorer. You can pencil it in. You know, O.J. Mayo is better. He's like, who's going to be better in 5 years? And this is that Boozer discussion that we just had. And I thought about it. I was like, man, I think Russell Westbrook. He's like, yeah, that's what I thought. I think we're going with Westbrook. You know, but you've got to be able to project And then, like you say, potential can get you killed, get you fired. But at the same time, and you guys made that point, and I'm glad you did, because I'm looking right now, but then you start thinking 23 versus 18. Mm-hmm. You know, 5 years from now, when Cameron is 23, you know, he could be just a total beast. So yeah, that's great information, man. Appreciate you guys. All right, let's go to the bouncies, the bounce player of the year. Victor Wembanyama. Talk about him. I mean, you know, you're not really saying he's MVP, but you would.
What's that all about? For what the newsletter does, he dominated. Like anytime he did something, we're trying to put it in the newsletter. Like he is just such a lightning rod, and people just want to see what he's doing because, look, I know Shaq has been like, you know, Bol Bol was kind of Wemby. Like, no one is Wemby before Wemby. It's like you took Kevin Durant and you made him 7'6", 7'7". But then also made him like one of the best shot blockers we've seen through this amount of, you know, experience in the NBA. I go back to this all the time. Like, that Court of Gold series on Netflix about the Olympic run. And, you know, the whole thing's great. But I watch the last two episodes every like couple of months because I just think it's incredible television. And the end of it is just keep sticking with me where, you know, they lose to Team USA. France loses to Team USA in the gold medal game. Wemby's crying. Like he's so distraught and everything. And those are all great signs. But then, you know, he's speaking to the people afterwards, the media afterwards. And he's like, I just feel sorry for my opponents in a couple of years. And like here or the NBA. And he's like everywhere. Like, and it's just that mentality, right? Like he's just cut from a different cloth than a lot of these guys, right? And it's not a knock on the young players now. I think young players today are great and they can be great and they do a great job of furthering the game. But he does remind me of someone from, you know, 30, 40 years ago who's like, hey, we're here to compete. I'm here to beat you. I will tell you I want MVP. I will tell you I want to beat you. I will tell you I want these championships. Like I'm here to do everything it takes. And I appreciate that dynamic. And also like, look, I have no idea how you even figure out what he's going to be 5 years, 6 years, 10 years from now. Like he's so good at this point. And not that no one's been this good before at this point, but it just looks different to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and it was a funny story with that. So I was talking with Usman Jang about INSEP. The INSEP, okay. So Usman was there from 14 to 17. Mm-hmm. Rupert or Rupert and then Dama Ball, they were there with him. And then Uzi shared with me that women and Victor came through and played with us for about 3 or 4 months. So I was like, you know, 15, 16 years old. I was like, so was he, you know, was he Victor Wembanyama then, or was he kind of, no, he was heads and shoulders above everybody even then. You know? So he's just one of these dudes, man, that's always, you know, he's just been good. He's just been good all along. And everybody Chris tried to sell me on him. And I thought maybe too frail to kind of last. I'm thinking Chet Holmgren, maybe he's going to go through some, you know, but man, forget about all that. He's so skilled.
I was ready to hate on him so quickly. Like the year before he was in the draft, the NBA app was like, we're putting all of Wemby's games in France on the app. And I'm like, get at it. Like, come on. Right. Like, get at it. And I'm like, all right, I'll tune in. I'm going to see what a bust this kid's going to be. And after the first five minutes of whatever game, I'm like, oh,
yeah,
I'm buying all the stock here. Like, this is crazy. Like, it's an immediate thing you see.
And you touched on it. It's the mental. Yeah. You know, a lot of guys may have had some you know, Zachary Richechet or Sar. They may have some similar skills. But his whole deal about being able to come out there and just relentless with just putting it on you possession after possession. And big shot maker, big shot taker, doesn't back down from the big moments. This dude is incredible. Chris, go ahead, man.
The thing that stands out to me about Wemby, Zach, as you had said, is his mentality. When he went through the Shaolin summer, before the season, when he went and visited the monks, when he went and got just that extra level of mental preparation, that let me know that there was something off about, not off about this dude, but I'm looking at this dude through the sideline.
He's different.
He's out here hanging out with monks in the offseason, bro.
Yeah.
And then the level of comfort and the nuances that he already possesses on the perimeter. It's not just about shooting threes. It's about reading, pacing, you know, can run pick and roll. Will be a screener on pick and roll, knows where to pop. It's like, it's almost like there's nothing he cannot do on the basketball court, and that is scary for everybody in the NBA for years to come.
And he still doesn't know what he's doing yet, right? Like, he's 21, 22. Yeah. Like, he's going to get so much smarter, so much better. And, yeah, like, you just bring up great – like, I think all that stuff, too, of, like, oh, he's going to, you know, Shaolin monks and all this stuff, it puts a target on you, right?
Yeah,
of like,
right,
oh, this
right. –
because everyone's ready to tear him down once he doesn't reach a certain level and everything. And the things he says, and people are like, oh, you can't say that. You can't. I'm like, why not? Like, if it puts pressure on you and you deliver under pressure, that's better for everybody.
Yeah,
well, not as opponents, but it's better for us.
Remember he said the thing about, I think it was Vegas being like a dystopian nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, so
I was hungover in my Vegas bed watching that. I was like, yeah, he's right. I don't want to be here anymore.
Oh, yeah. No, he's definitely a different breed. I can remember back in those days, Chris, I never shared this with you, but my fantasy along those lines was to go and work out at Muhammad Ali's training camp in Deer Lake, Pennsylvania. I mean, just you know, get up early and run into miles. And I reached out to Howard Bingham, his photographer. Never worked out, but that was always my thing. Like, man, if I could just the way they made it look, it's like the it was like a Navy SEAL training. It was just like you had to come back mentally so much tougher. And to see Victor actually live that out, man, was fun for me. Rookie of the Year. Mm-hmm. Now you say Cooper Flagg. Let me run this by you.
Yeah.
If there ever was a year for co-rookie of the years, now I know I sound like a total dweeb for even suggesting this, but you had Cowens and Petrie, early 70s. Mm-hmm. You had Grant Hill and Jason Kidd, mm-hmm. which I want to bet on with Nate the Skate. Chris, you know Nate the Skate. He's like, Jason Kidd is overrated, bro. I said, he's going to be rookie of the year, man. And it was Kidd and Grant Hill. And then this one you guys will appreciate. Stevie Francis and Elton Brand. I got a call from Brian McIntyre, Zach, after the voting was done. And Brian was like, look, man, you know, and Brian was really cool. I love Brian to death, the media guy for the NBA. He was a media director and coordinated everything, got your great tickets whenever you needed them. He was one of the greatest all-time NBA guys around. So when he reached out to me and said, is it okay if we change your vote? These two guys are separated by like two votes. So is it okay if we change your vote from my, and I forgot who I voted for because it was that close. And I'm like, yeah, it's like six in one hand, half a dozen in the other. So they gave them co. I mean, I don't know.
I wouldn't hate it. I would, if it ends up that way, I wouldn't hate it. Like I got my ballot today after all this appeal stuff is done. I have until, I don't know, 3 p.m. Eastern tomorrow to figure it out. Like, I flip-flop on it all the time between Cooper and Khan because I think Cooper is the best rookie I've seen this year.
Okay.
But I do think consistency matters. I think the way Khan has been able to, like, he doesn't really have down months. And I don't think this is Cooper's fault because Cooper's had a chaotic rookie season, but he had that foot sprain, missed a bunch of games, came back, and he wasn't really hitting shots. He was still playing well, but he wasn't hitting shots for a couple of weeks. Then he goes for 51 and 45 and it gets back, you know, gets his momentum back. So I think the consistency of Khan is what would drive me to vote for him. And I never put team success into a rookie of the year race unless it's so close that I'm like, okay, are you doing it in more important games? Now, the Mavericks were in a bunch of close games. They relied on Cooper Flagg. He was one of the top, I don't know, 15, 20 clutch scores in the league this season. I think that matters. But for Khan to do it on a team that may make the playoffs, we'll see you Friday night, but like may make the playoffs and a team that was really bad to start the season and he helped turn it around. It's a bit of a cop out that I'm like, I don't really know who I'm voting for, but it's going to come down to a point where that drop down menu is going to come and I'm going to be like, okay, I guess it's Cooper or I guess it's Khan.
Yeah.
And like, I still don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. And Khan is actually Khan, you know, Milwaukee kid and Wisconsin Lutheran, you know, state champion, this and that, and Duke and how he played there. But the thing about Cooper, so Cooper had his stock had fallen. He was injured right after right around the All-Star break, came back early March, had some, you know, so-so games. When they played the Bucks in a makeup game in late March or early April, whenever it was, end of March, early April, it was a makeup game because of the snow in Dallas in January. I talked to Jason Kidd, and Jason Kidd said that, you know, that you know, that they were looking at the Laker game and that he needed to have a 50-point game. Now, it's one thing to say that. It reminds me of David Thompson, George Gervin, Chris, the last day of the season when David got 73, George needed 58, 59. He went out and got 63. It's one thing to say, you know, I'd like to see him get 50 to solidify his case. It's another thing for the young man to go out there and actually do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what Cooper was able to do. So when you mentioned Cooper and Khan, as much as I love Khan Kinnipal and what he has meant this season and how much I loved him at Duke last year, God, this Cooper it's, flag dude, man. Cooper's on some other stuff, man. So, yeah.
He's unbelievable. Yeah, they're both unbelievable. And I'd mentioned the whole thing about trying to hate on Wemby. I absolutely hated on Khan Kinnipal. I was like, this kid isn't going to be anything in the NBA. And then like a month in, I was like, ooh, I got to walk that back. That's not looking so good anymore.
Yeah. He's got a cousin. What's his cousin's name, Chris?
Xavier Zins.
He's got a cousin, Zach, who played for Wisconsin Lutheran this year with all the Khan brothers, Cash and Cole and Ken and Kay and all
who's
the
tall. There's one that was tall as hell at the draft. I was like, who is this kid? Like,
all the Kinnipals. They were 30-0. They won two state champions, and this first cousin of theirs, Xavier Zins. He had committed to Northern Iowa, then Jacobson left to go to wherever he went, and then he decommitted. And now you said Chrissy may wind up in Illinois. So just a name to throw out there. So, but let's move on to the ladies. The WNBA draft was recently. Azzi Fudd was the number one NBA draft pick. Now I'm getting a little blowback in terms of other players that people say were better than her. What's your take on that, Zach?
Yeah, like Azzi Fudd, like she's incredible. She can play. I don't know a whole lot about the center from Spain, Awafam. Yeah. Like I just trust the people I know who know this stuff, and they're like, this woman is legit. Right? Like she's gonna you give her 2 years in the WNBA, she's gonna be a problem. And so I'll trust those experts on her game. But maybe this is recency bias with how the season went. I was a little shocked that Lauren Betts was not like front and center in that conversation or top three. Like the fact that she falls so far, I was like, look, I watched a good amount of women's basketball. A lot of that was UCLA, and she dominated like just about every game I saw. And I was you saw the championship run, but I was just like, I don't know. Like, I don't see what doesn't translate to the W. Like this feels like the person to me, but what do I know? But yeah, she was one where I was like, okay, she'll go two. Nope, Livia Miles goes two. Okay, she'll go three. Nope, the woman from Spain goes three. I was like, she's a fourth pick in this draft. It can't be that deep.
Yeah.
I don't think so either. I think the thing that makes Lauren Betts just so different is her unicorn-like ability to switch and guard you on the perimeter. She can switch. I watched her switch on little players that with bags, stay in front, taking angles. Mm-hmm. Then blocking shots, Oklahoma State, there's a young lady named Jaden Wooten, about 5'8", but just the deepest bag you'll ever see in college basketball. And Lauren was switching on her, guarding her. Now, she started to develop the Tim Duncan face-up jumper towards the end of the season, really started to gain confidence in it. It's not necessarily a shot that she's mastered right now, but I think with the reps she's going to get in Washington in that situation down there, and then she has her teammate, Angela Dugalich, and then her coach, Michaela Onyenwere, is down there as well. She's down there with former Princeton guy that beat us in 96. Sidney Johnson is the head coach down there. Good development situation, good opportunity for her to play and grow. I think that she, of all the draft picks, and this isn't even Fam, right? I'm taking her over Fam for those reasons. She's proven it on the championship level, on the highest level of women's college basketball. So I'm a big Lauren Betts fan, and not just because I'm a Bruin.
Yeah. And I mean, I think anyone watched her. Like, I watched every tournament game they had, and I watched maybe a handful of games before that throughout the season. Every time I would see her, and then I would go check with people who like really know this stuff. And I was like, so this is the best player in the nation? Like, nah, it's this person. I was like, maybe I just don't know what I'm watching. I don't know. Like it felt pretty obvious to me, but I'm here, they're there. I don't know.
You're not alone, Zach. You're not alone.
So, Chris, I mean, you've seen these ladies play. So the Bruins had a record night, the most first rounders from one school, five total draftees, six, all going in the first 18 picks. Who's going to be the star of the bunch? I mean, is it Lauren Betts? Is it Gabs? Is it, Rice, Kiki? Who do you think, Chris, Zach? But, Chris, you've really been watching this closely. If you had to put a numerical kind of listing on who's going to be best to not so best, what would you say?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. I think Lauren's obviously going to be the number one because she's going to get a lot of opportunity. I say also, and this is might be a little controversial, but Angela Dugalic, the 6'4 Serbian forward for UCLA, the jack of all trades. She can guard 1 through 5. I've seen her do it the entire season. Now, the offensive game needs a little refining, but her ability to share the ball, defend, and her comfort in the post and on the perimeter, to me, she's like my second pick. And then from there, I think Gianna Neepkins, the pick out of Connecticut Sun. 6'1", but a 50, 40, 90 player at Utah last season. Came close to replicating those numbers this year at UCLA. Pure shooter, grew up with 5 brothers. So she has one of those crafty games that she can get off her stuff against everybody. She was handling the ball against Texas's pesky guards. You know, had no problem being a facilitator. Coach Close actually wanted her to dribble the ball more, to create more this season. She was arguably one of the biggest reasons why UCLA was able to take that leap. I also think Kiki Rice and Gabriela Jaquez are going to get opportunities to play. I think Jaquez has a lot of wings out there in Chicago with guards, perimeter players, Skylar Diggins, J.C. Sheldon over there with Chicago Sky. So her opportunity may not be as much as Kiki will get as Toronto Tempo's first draft pick ever. She's going to get a lot of love out there. And then finally, Charlize Ledger-Walker out of the of New Zealand. She's going to go to the Connecticut Sun with Neepkins. Just a really crafty, heady, smart player. Listen to this. Her freshman year, she was the same freshman class with Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark, all those, and made like that freshman All-American team. She averaged 20 a game. She was a 4-time All-Pac-12 performer at Washington State. One of the great ballers that you'll see had a bad ACL. So she kind of got together this year, made a recovery. But that's sort of my list and how I envision that thing going next year in the W.
Zach, Chris follows. You can tell Chris is on top.
He's on it. Yeah.
That's his beat. Anything to add?
Yeah, the only thing I'd be worried about with Gabby is the Chicago Sky do not have a good reputation right now in terms of retaining players and creating a good environment for players to be in. So that's the only thing I would be worried about with her. Obviously, she can hoop. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. But you make a really good point about will the opportunities be there right away. Kiki, I think it's really cool that she gets to be like basically the face of this franchise for this new Toronto team, the Tempo, like right away. I think that's a very exciting opportunity for her. And then the non-UCLA, like Olivia Miles, I'm connected to the Lynx a little bit, and the Lynx are just like an organization I really appreciate. When Lindsey Whalen was a point guard there, like everything was kind of, you know, she wasn't always the best player, but things were kind of around her as the engine. I think Olivia's got a chance to really do some cool things with Fee.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, I got to throw these names out there just so I can keep getting my media credential for these tournaments that I go to for the women's game high school. But here's some names. I'm going to circle back in a year or two years. And Kalena Smith, Special K from Southern California, really, really outstanding, crappy little guard. Tatiana Griffin, another just solid player. Karis Rainey, who played with my daughter at Windward High School, averaged about 28 a game this year. Amel Cook was hurt this year, but she's one of the best women's players I've seen in a long time. And then Hamadi Arenas, Gilbert Arenas' younger daughter, is someone to watch out for too. So I'm just throwing those names out there in terms of kind of women's prospects to look forward to developing over the next couple of years. But listen, Zach, man, we appreciate you stopping by to hear District, man. And good luck, continued success on the bounce and everything. And I'm going to subscribe as soon as we get off the air here and get that thing. I didn't realize. I've seen excerpts. I've read excerpts all the time. And right now, I'm going to be a member of your subscription base. Your subscriber.
I appreciate it. We're closing in on 1 million, so we're getting there. We're not quite there. We're a little bit away, but we're in the 9.
We're getting there.
Yeah,
that's great, man. That's great. And you do a great job. It's understandable why you've had all the success you had. Thanks for coming by here, District Man. We thank you, Zach Harper. Thank you so much.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.